Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Well, let me turn to my guest, who is patiently waiting for me to introduce him this morning. Joining us from his home in Kirtland, New Mexico, Sheriff Shane Ferrari is with me this morning. Sheriff, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having me on once again.
I appreciate you being with us, Sheriff, and thank you for joining us. And, of course, you and the Sheriff's Office, like everyone else, dealing with this pandemic and dealing with staying-at-home orders and everything else. And I wanted to bring you on the program to talk a little bit about a post that you made on social media maybe a couple days ago about kind of your role in all of this and what you can do as the sheriff and what you can't do as the sheriff. Would you mind maybe explaining a little bit about that to us?
I sure would. Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Again, thanks for having me on, and thanks for giving me the opportunity so I can explain that. Over the past several weeks, as we've been under this health order, I've gotten a lot of interaction with the citizens and a lot of correspondence going back and forth. I've one group of people that's wondering why I'm not enforcing the health order, and then I have another group of people wondering why I'm, as sheriff, not allowing businesses to open, thinking it's my authority. So after the last health order that came out, saying that Northwestern New Mexico would not follow the rest of the state in reopening, I felt compelled at that point time to release some information and kind of give people an idea of what sheriff's offices can do and cannot do. So first of all, we have to remember these are health orders. There is a law that the legislation has given the powers to the governor to under health orders to put forth certain restrictions. Those are orders. I enforce state law and county ordinance, so I don't enforce orders. And it's very clear in state statute, they say the three authorities over health orders are the Secretary of Health, the New Mexico DPS Secretary, which is the state police, the enforcement branch of that, and also they list the Secretary, and the Secretary is defined as either the New Mexico Homeland New Mexico Homeland Security Secretary or the state emergency management secretary. So those are the authorities in it. So I don't have any say-so when it comes to health orders. I didn't ask for them, and I can't enforce them. So, you know, what I wanted to do is get some information out to the people that they're growing frustrated. Whether sure. It was people growing frustrated because people wanting to obey in them, or the frustration of many business owners and workers that right now they're very and have a legitimate concern for their businesses and our local economy. So I wanted to give out some of that information and also some examples of what's happened in New Mexico where sheriffs, again, trying to do the right thing, have tried to find ways, or I don't want to really call them loopholes, but find areas within these health orders where their communities could stay open or may govern themselves a little bit more and not feel that they're under a blanket order.
Understood. And so with that being said, though, Sheriff, I mean, if you were asked for assistance from the state police, would the sheriff's office give that assistance if the state police were enforcing these orders under their authority?
Not under the health order. I mean, I always want to be there for any of our agencies that are here in San Juan County. And trust me, I have plenty of resources, whether it's Navajo Nation, city police or the state. But this is a state order, and it's clearly defined in state statute that they are the enforcement branch of that. I feel my role and the role of my deputies is really being that buffer in between. And I've helped coordinate meetings with business owners, with the state police that have called me frustrated, feeling like they were maybe lumped into a category that they shouldn't have been, that they felt that they were essential. So what I've been doing is being more of a mediator in those and getting these folks together, getting them talking, feeling like they have a voice in these orders, and they feel they can have somebody to talk to. And if I can be that conduit, then I'm going to be there for them.
Understood. And Sheriff, I'm sure you're getting a lot of pushback from maybe the folks that support the healthcare workers. We all support the healthcare workers, but other folks saying that, you know, don't you understand that maybe the reasons why they want these businesses more shut down than not is to try to control the spread of this virus and to protect our healthcare workers and not overwhelm our hospital and all those different things that we hear about that our county is really trying to strive toward in order to open up more of these businesses. Is that something that you can tell people that you do understand their perspective on that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I understand their perspective. And, you know, whether they have, you know, medical conditions now or they have loved ones with medical conditions, then they have a true fear over this virus. I understand that. I do. And, you know, as far as what, again, my role in this is I don't enforce those health orders. I'm listening to them. I'm trying to remain neutral. You know, I understand the predicament that many people are in because of their health. I do understand that. I look at the data just like anybody else. I realize that a majority of our fatalities because of COVID are coming out of nursing homes, not the general public. So it leads me to believe that we have a facility issue, not a community issue. Not to say that many people out there won't become exposed and not know it, but I understand that. And not being able to control things. As somebody that goes after bad guys every day, it's a heck of a lot easier when I got a name and a face to go after somebody rather than just a phantom out there, which technically this virus is. I'm in no means a health expert, but this is new water for law enforcement. I'm trying to balance civil liberties with health, with people that are frustrated wanting to get back to their previous lifestyle, economic concerns. So it's a juggling act right now, and I'm trying to balance that. And it really, what we're doing is we're fighting against a clock right now. Can enough time go by where this virus will die down? And hopefully in that meantime, our economy won't further die. We were already struggling in San Juan County as our economy. So that's been a huge, huge point of frustration in this community that I think has kind of compressed the issue beyond just that of health. We have a dying economy here, and this virus definitely didn't help us out. So I'm worried about what's going to happen 6 months from now. What I'm looking at is not the position we're in now. I'm looking for the shockwave that's going to come back. Not only for our economy, but also crime. Right now, domestic violence calls are down. But people think, well, that's great. Domestic violence calls are down. Well, does that mean they're down? Or does that mean that maybe somebody's home with their abuser and can't call for help? Our restraining orders are down. Our CHINS referrals, which are children in need of services, those are down. A lot of times we get those requests or those that information in those cases that are coming to us from schools. Well, there's no school in session. So we have children that are home with their abusers, and we're not going to hear about an incident until 6 months from now. So I'm looking 6 months ahead and trying to look at what the impact's going to be, not only the health impact, not only the economic impact, but even a crime impact.
I understand. And that's a big concern for a lot of folks, the social damage that this could be doing. I agree with you 100%, and I appreciate that answer. Talk to me a little bit about some of the other events that are going on. There was a business rally, for lack of a better term, to open up businesses held last week in Farmington. And I think there's another one planned this week in Farmington. You were there, I believe, at the one. Are you planning to be there again tomorrow? And what's your role in going to these types of events?
Well, my role as sheriff, as defined in New Mexico state statute, it says I'm the conservator of the peace, and that's exactly what I'm doing at these rallies. Regardless of a health order, health orders do not trump somebody's constitutional rights. And when I have a group of people that don't want to express their civil liberties, their right to free speech, their right to peacefully assemble, the right to address their government, I'm going to make sure those rights are protected. And when I first heard about the rally that was going to take place in Farmington, I had a legitimate concern, as did those that were participating or organizing the event. They reached out to me and they said, you know, Sheriff, we want to have this event. It's going to be in Farmington. Again, it's in the city limits of Farmington, but Farmington falls within the county. So I felt that the best thing to do as a conservator of the peace was to get a hold of the authorities and the health order. So I contacted the state police, informed them of what was happening. The state police says they're well within their rights to have their rally or protest, whatever you want to call it. And I told them that I felt it was of their benefit that I handled the situation, being that there's a lot of tension right now between the state police and the community. And unfortunately, they're the ones that have been given the marching orders to enforce the governor's. And I'm not saying they agree with it. They're in a tough predicament. They're being given orders to go out and do these things, to shut down businesses. And these businesses are their family and their friends. After talking to state police and telling them I would handle it, I contacted the city of Farmington. City of Farmington was well aware of it and didn't see any issues with them conducting a peaceful rally. So I went there mainly in my role as sheriff to let them know that I hear you, understand that I don't have any authority in these health orders, but also understand why you're demonstrating, that you don't have to be worried or fear of somebody coming in and shutting it down. I'm here for you. Let your voice be heard, and let's get going. And we did. And a lot of great people showed up, to be honest with you. I thought there was going to be 50 to 80 people. I think there turned out to be 500 to 800. There was too many to count. There wasn't any issues when we were there. There was not one piece of trash I saw on the ground when they left. I did have some people reach out to me and were very frustrated because of the rally and the violation of health order, concerned that there was going to be further spread because of the rally. I did explain to them that once again, that these are civil liberties that cannot be suppressed by a health order. And hopefully they understood that. And we'll move on from there, but they're going to have one Thursday again. And I suspect it's going to be larger than the last.
Interesting. But Sheriff, isn't it a bit of a mixed message to be able to have these rallies and certainly celebrate and have your constitutional rights, but also be in violation of these health orders about social distancing and wearing masks and those kinds of things? Do you think it would send a better message if these folks did want to have their First Amendment rights, but also maybe practice some of the other things to keep others healthy, as what we're being told is the right thing to do to keep this from spreading in our community, which already has the second highest rates in the state?
Absolutely. I think we can accomplish both.
But they didn't do that last week. That was my concern, right?
Yeah, and you're right. And when the invitation was out, it said, please practice social distancing. It said it in the invitation. At that time, last Thursday, we weren't under the expanded health order that said that folks have to wear masks out in public. And yes, there was violations of that. And I had people asking me, why wasn't I on stage telling everybody to social distance? The invitation went out. It told people to social distance while they were there. Everybody there was well aware of the health order. They read it. That's why they were there and in disagreement of it. And I told folks that the higher mission that day was for me to be there and oversee a peaceful protest. For me to get up on stage and further lecture them about the health order would have been like pouring gasoline on a fire. I don't think that was the mission that day. The mission, again, was to have a peaceful protest. 500 to 800 people, that was of higher importance. That was a priority. Once again, I've been able to see the invitations coming out from the organizers of this group. Again, they're telling people to social distance. I understand there's going to be a couple businesses that are going to be on site at the event that's happening Thursday, and they're going to be handing out free masks for people that didn't bring them. And I'd hope they take advantage of that. But I do believe that we can accomplish both things. I think we can social distance. I think that, you know, we can wear masks. And I'll get into masks and what I think of them here in a second. But, yes, they all can be accomplished. When it comes to the masks, you know, I've got a lot of phone calls saying, Sheriff, I have a health condition. I can't wear a mask. That wasn't addressed. What do I do? I had one lady who called the hotline, and they said, well, just get with your local sheriff or PD, and they'll go to Walmart and tell them you don't have to wear a mask. Well, that's not going to happen. You might as well give me your shopping list, and I'll go shop for you. I don't have the resources to follow everybody to the store to say this person has a pre-existing condition and can't wear a mask. And that's caused a little bit of frustration within the community. We have some people that have self-deputized themselves as the face mask police and are causing confrontations with others out in parking lots before they even enter a public establishment, violating the 6-foot rule themselves and chastising people for not wearing a mask. So I humbly ask and that everybody, let's remember our manners and not cause further confrontation. We're already stressed out as we are, but the last thing we need to do is have a fight in the middle of a Lowe's parking lot because somebody wasn't wearing a mask.
Understood. And I hear you. And I think that's some good advice for all of us during all this time, Sheriff. I completely agree with you. Let me ask you a bit about the lockdown that happened in the city of Gallup. And I know that I think you were contacted and other city officials were contacted about maybe a similar situation happening here. It doesn't sound like that's ever going to happen in San Juan County, because the situation in Gallup was requested by their mayors, both outgoing and incoming. And so is that something that you would agree with, that a lockdown just wouldn't be feasible here and probably local officials would not ask for the state to do something like that here?
Correct. I don't think it's realistic or feasible. So let's look at the lockdown that happened in Gallup. So you had the outgoing mayor, from what I understood, was approached by the state, recognizing Northwestern New Mexico as a hotspot, and said, do you want to enact the Riot Act, which essentially gives or asks or requests the state come in and augment resources in your community. But there's also some other things that happen. It allows the governor to put roadblocks in place and curfews in place. And that was a decision they made due to McKinley County. And they're the hottest county in New Mexico when it comes to COVID. The same discussion was had with our local leaders, and I was brought in kind of at the tail end of it with my opinion on it. So I don't think it's realistic, because what we're looking at doing is just shutting down U.S. highways and 550. I saw the pictures of what happened in Gallup when you looked at miles and miles worth of traffic blocked up. You're talking about major interstates that are happening through those areas. I don't have the resources for those. Even if the state police bought those resources up there, I don't think it's feasible for the many, many travelers that pass through the Four Corners area, specifically in the Farmington area. But also, there's more back roads, two tracks leading into Farmington than just US 64. So I don't think it's realistic. I think shoppers would continue to come into Farmington. We recognize that we're a shopping hub of the Four Corners. We service over 300,000 shoppers. And I have some constitutional issues with that. I cannot imagine myself stopping a person maybe traveling from Shiprock or maybe south of Bloomfield and say, no, you can't come into town to get your baby formula. Those people need resources that are outside of wherever those roadblocks will be. They need the resources to make sure they can make it through the weekend. And granted, they do give them advance notice. I know that. But everybody's returned home from shopping and realized you forgot something essential. So I don't think it's realistic.
Understood.
And it's not something I think San Juan County has done an amazing job at partnering with the Navajo Nation. And we've built strong relationships. I get along with Philip Francisco, the chief out there. We've worked together. We have a great relationship. I really think it would cause some stress, frustration, and really set us back a couple decades if we were to block the Navajo Nation from coming into the Four Corners area. We rely on their business, and we want to let them know that we care about them, and we hear what's going on there. San Juan County and the cities have done a great job in supporting them, and we're going to continue to do so.
Very good, Sheriff. Thank you. And I want to switch gears now for just a moment. In the minutes we have remaining this morning, to ask you a little bit about the Sasha Krauss case, that horrible, horrible crime in our community, that young woman who was apparently kidnapped from her home at Crouch Mesa, taken into Northern Arizona, and her body was found. There's now been two arrests, suspect and his brother. But this case, I know, was very stressful for you and for your detectives and for your deputies, because it took a while to make this arrest and maybe to see some of the pieces fall together. And so can you talk to us a little bit about, I know you can't say everything about this case because it's still being litigated, but can you give us a little bit of an idea of just kind of how these things developed and what broke the case and led to the arrest, if you can share that?
Sure. As you said, frustration was the tone of the day during this entire investigation. I'm sure the detectives division got tired of me opening their door every morning and saying, where are we at? And it was difficult. Here we had a situation where somebody was plucked out of our community in the middle of the night. And I have millennial deputies, most of them, who are so used to technology and cameras and cell phones and social media and emails and all these things to really give us that first start or steps that's involved. Now you couple that with this being a Mennonite victim. And this is a religion that chooses to be somewhat separated from modern society. You know, they're self-sufficient. They don't embrace many of the things that we do as far as technology. So my millennial deputies had to run a 1950 style investigation. At the same time, at the end of this, which really led to Mark Gooch's arrest, we used the latest technology. So the detectives did a phenomenal job about preserving whatever evidence they think may be of value in the future, and that paid off. So once we found Sasha Krause's body in Coconino County, I think it set aside really our opinion on what kind of case we were dealing with. We didn't know if we had somebody that was voluntarily missing, didn't want to be found, or somebody that had been abducted. And that was not only frustration on us, but our community. Did we have somebody preying on San Juan County or a predator living in San Juan County? So by finding her body, it let us know what we were dealing with. We were dealing with a true crime here. And, you know, we were able to preserve some evidence off the scene where Sasha was, I'm going to say it, dumped off at. She really was. And thank goodness we found her within a reasonable amount of time, which helped towards some of that preservation of the evidence. The Daily Times here recently released a story, and they gave some more details that we hadn't released to the public, specifically in the area of cell phone usage. I won't get too far into that, but we did use cell phone technology to start pinpointing towards a possible suspect, not only here in New Mexico, but in Colorado. The great work of the San Juan County Sheriff's detectives and their preserving possible evidence helped link some of those pieces of evidence that we found, specifically Mark Gooch's vehicle. We were able to capture it on outside security surveillance that we had a vehicle. We knew what type of vehicle it was, and it had very distinct identifiers on it. So once we started looking towards Mark Gooch and finding out what he drove, what he did during the day, airman at Luke Air Force Base, so his activities coming in and off of the base were able to be recorded, and we were able to put a timeline together. So all of this led up to our interview with him. I think initially he thought that we had been looking at him as a possible witness. We were lucky enough that he did admit to being in the Four Corners area. And that's where this thing started snowballing. And we started picking up more and more evidence, and we're able to collaborate that evidence with items that we had secured and preserved beforehand. And an arrest was made. After the arrest was made, Mark was in jail. And as the newspaper reported, we were able to capture or Coconino County was able to capture some of the phone calls that he was receiving out of the jail, contacting his brother and requesting that his brother come and get rid of the murder weapon. So again, we knew we had the right guy from the beginning, and this just furthered our decision that we had the right guy. And it was a tough investigation, and this was good old gumshoe work by some great detectives.
And Sheriff, I wanted to ask you too about motive then, because I think a lot of folks were concerned that this could be just some random attack and abduction and things along that line, or was Sasha targeted? Is there anything you could share with us about, obviously, if you've got the right guy, then there's not some creep going around, stealing young women from our community. But that was a concern I know that a lot of folks said to you, shared with you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And people are still asking, what was the motive, the why? You know, I wish I could comment more on that. What I can tell you is that the Mark Gooch and the Gooch family were prior Mennonite. And from what we're gathering so far, they were excommunicated from the church. So we don't know at this time if there was some resentfulness of that. What we have learned is the Mennonite community has a great networking chain. They know where their communities are at. They know who's involved. We have found some loose data showing that members of Mark Gooch's family and Sasha knew each other or attended functions together. We haven't found any direct information to Mark, but with other family members. So we're certain at this point that Mark was very aware of the community that we have here in San Juan County. But to the why, I can't answer that so far. My hope is that we have two people in custody right now. And quite often when we have two people in custody, either somebody wants to squeal to get loose or somebody wants to work a deal out to help protect the other person. And I'm hoping as this case moves forward in prosecution that somebody, one of them, whether it's Mark or Samuel, will come forward and give us some more details into the why. Because that is something I still struggle with, although we know the who, and we've recovered Sasha and hopefully given her family some peace of mind right now and our community. We still want to know why. And I'm hoping I can answer that someday.
Understood. And Sheriff, you were mentioning to me, too, that now there is some discussion between you, your sheriff's office, and the Coconino County Sheriff's Office, that would be out of the Flagstaff area, about what type of charges to pursue against these two suspects, or at least one of them, and that maybe there might be some federal charges that they are, or one of them might be facing because of the fact that this crime spread across state lines, and those federal charges may have more severe penalties than just whatever the states of New Mexico and Arizona can come up with, right?
Absolutely. So the state of New Mexico's court system and judicial system, I think, is a lot stronger than New Mexico's. Arizona still has capital punishment. They still have the death penalty. The first thing we need to talk about is jurisdictions. A crime that happened in New Mexico, when we have a crime that happened in Arizona. Because it crossed state lines, there is federal law when it talks about kidnapping and homicide when it comes to crossing state lines. So I've been in contact with the Coconino County Sheriff, Sheriff Driscoll. So far, I believe that Arizona is going to move forward with state charges for the homicide and kidnap, tampering with evidence. And I think they also have larceny listed as one of their charges towards Mark, and then additional charges towards Samuel. New Mexico, however, we do not have capital punishment anymore. Unfortunately, we have a pretty weak judicial system, and I feel that as sheriff, it's my job to meet with our prosecutors and make a decision with them. Of course, it's ultimately going to be theirs, that we make sure that Mark Gooch receives the highest punishment that we have. If it requires us to lean on our federal partners and go federal with charges, I'm an opponent of it. I mean, federal charges, they're definitely carry a bigger hammer. They have capital punishment, but I want to make sure that not only this community, but Sasha Krause's family and Sasha receive the justice they deserve. And that'll be further discussed as we see what happens in Arizona. We haven't filed charges at this time. The problem is once we file charges, that starts a clock. And it's going to be, I could see it a year or two out before we see what's going to come out of Arizona. So we don't want to file those charges just yet, but there is no statute of limitations on first-degree felonies, which is what he's looking at. So we're being smart about how and when we're going to file these charges.
I understand. And for the audience to know, these two suspects are still in custody, are they not?
Yes, sir, they are.
Very good. Well, Sheriff Shane Ferrari, we are just about out of time. I appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you for your time and, again, explaining some of these things that you are dealing with every day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate you having me on and being able to share some of that information with our community.
You're very welcome. And I want to let the audience know, especially for those that are listening to us on the radio, Sheriff, that we did not add the sounds of the singing birds in the background of this interview. That's just the way it is at your house.
Yes, it is. And I'm sorry, I wondered if you could hear that. I've got a mule next door to me, so I'm just thankful
we haven't heard
to go off and you asked yeah. what that background noise was.
The mule I haven't heard, but the birds sound great. Okay. So I understand why you love it there so much. Thank you, Sheriff.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
Appreciate you.
Sheriff Shane Ferrari, my guest here on KSJE. And I'll be back with more in just a moment, everybody. The time right now is 8:40 a.m. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.